Thank you, Professor Waits. Now I'd like to introduce to you Professor Robert Sousson. He's the coordinator of the EU Integrated Project Quantify, again at the German DLR.
Good morning to everybody. As you see, I have specified my title somewhat more, which makes it more visible what you are expecting, because you are not so familiar with Quantify. So I'm comparing the climate impact of different transport modes, setting aviation in the frame with other transport. I can do some things somewhat faster, because you have already learned quite a bit today. So one thing is aviation or transport can contribute is by emitting of greenhouse gases, those gases which are currently in the Kyoto basket. Putting this together, I've done this for EU15. These are the states which were already part of the European Union when the Kyoto Protocol was signed. So what you see, the black line, that's the total equivalent CO2 emission of the European Union. That decreased from 1990 to 2007, that's are the last date of agreed numbers, by 5.5%. Top curve is all the transport emissions, increased by something like 37%, and of course, if the total is going down, the non-transport emissions must go down stronger than the total, which by 70%. If I put another major economic region to this, USA, you see the situation is somewhat different. Until about 2000, all the three curves go more or less in parallel, and then there's a split. Again, transport is growing faster than the rest of the emissions, 25% in relation to plus 11%. You might like to know how this accounts to aviation with respect to other modes. I have done this for the European Union again. The black curve is the one you have seen before. Now the red curve are basically the transport, which is mostly inland surface transport, road transport, inland shipping and railways. And you see the blue curves and the purple dashed curves, these are the marine and aviation bunkers, and that's what you heard, nearly more than doubling for aviation in the European Union for this period. These are now relative numbers. Let me put these numbers on absolute numbers. In this chart, you see the black line against the total emissions and bottom on top of each other, the marine and aviation bunker curves. And I also indicated the Kyoto target for European Union, minus 8%, and the new target, which is the lower most target, is minus 20% until 2020. Assuming that transport goes linear with time, you get to these lower red and purple squares and triangles. Then you can do the fraction of transport to the various sections. You see, the land transport was something like 17% in 1990, increased to 23% in 2007, aviation from 2% to 4% in 2007. And if you go further to the future, transport would be like more than 40% of the total emissions already in 2020, aviation coming up to more than 7% in 2020. This kind of scheme was the reason why we came to the Quantify project. But actually, as you have heard, aviation has other chances to impact climate by emission of ozone precursors, particles and additional clouds, which is not only unique for aviation, but also ships have the possibility to modify clouds. Yeah, that was the reason why we started the Quantify project a few years ago. It's now coming to an end, and we are now in the phase that we are doing the reporting. And if you want to see more on the project, go to this web address. And what did we do? We started the chain of impact from emission inventories down to regional dilution processing, going on the large-scale chemical effects and cloud processes, calculating the radiative forcing, and finally, climate change. And of course, you can't go always this chain with very complicated models all the time. In policymaking, you need kind of metrics which bypass this complicated way, but mirror at least most of the tools which is in the complicated way. This is done by metrics. And eventually then come down to climate impact, which was not part of the Quantify project. You heard quite a bit about CO2 emissions in various scenarios. So I picked up a NOx emission. And this is for all this range of scenarios, which are in the gray range from the lower and the upper quantifier scenarios. All modes from shipping, railroad, cars, and aviation. If you then put it into fraction, in 2000, more than half of the NOx came from road transport. If we go to the end of this century, the road fraction is more or less gone. It's because the assumption is that catalysts have been very efficiently introduced into the section, which you actually expect to happen already in maybe something 20 to 30 years from now. So at the end, it's about 3/4 of the NOx emissions come from ships and 1/4 from aviation, depending on the scenarios. If you go to the very low growing scenario, ship is even more dominating things. If you look how the various things modify the ozone. So this is the ozone perturbation for January and July. So most of the emissions appear to happen in the northern hemisphere, and the ozone effect depends very much on the solar insulation, so it's stronger in summertime than in wintertime. And you see on the right-hand side that road transport even goes up to the altitudes where also aviation is active. Aviation is the most lower right panel, about somewhat larger than the road effects at the altitude. And at the bottom, you see the effect of shipping, which happens over the ocean, where convective is not as active as over land, so the stuff stays more close to the surface. If you summarize this in simple numbers, you could look how many ozone molecules are produced per NOx molecule emitted. You come up with this numbers. And if you compare this, you can see one road NOx molecule by aviation produces 5 times as much ozone as one molecule emitted by road transport. It's due to the special location and due to the situation that the air is cleaner in that altitude, and that NOx stays longer in the atmosphere emitted by aviation. The other effect was the methane thing, and here you compare, you see that aviation and road are about the same destruction, while shipping more efficiently destructs ozone because they are running in a clean atmosphere where you have the effect is much higher. You have seen the chart. I will not go into details, but I will show you one point of one thing. If you look for the situation radiative forcing, all the non-CO2 effects are twice as large as the CO2 in 2005. We did similar things for all the other sections, which I will not show you right now due to the short of time. I rather will show you a summary. If you compare radiative forcing, you have the by far largest part from road transport, as you would expect, because road transport is more than 10 times as much emissions in CO2-wise and other things than the other modes. You have a negative contribution by shipping, which might be surprising in the first instance. The reason for this is that fuel by ships contains a lot of sulfur, and this makes low-level clouds, and low-level clouds are cooling. And aviation is this positive fraction, which is something like 1/4 of the road effect. And railways also contribute a significant part, half of this as aviation. But there's a caveat I would like to make on radiative forcing, because people like to look quite a bit on radiative forcing, but there are a few things. One thing is a positive thing. Radiative forcing is a very good measure to understand what the selected process or the selected sector contributes to climate until now or until a certain time if you go into the future. However, when you want to regulate, radiative forcing is not a good measure, because radiative forcing is something which looks backward. And you cannot regulate backward emissions. Emissions which are done, they are done. You cannot get them out of the atmosphere anymore. You can only regulate things in the future. Therefore, you need something that you can use for future. But there's a way out of this. And Ian Waite already told you a little bit about this. And from my point of view, something from the science point should be based on the temperature, for instance, temperature change after time or integrated temperature change, which is more or less comparable and take into account the kind of accumulation and integration the atmosphere climate system does. And this then would allow you to transfer the non-CO2 effect in equivalent CO2, in particular which is a particularly important for aviation, where the short-lived effects are fairly large, as you've seen. In fact, two times as large in the radiative forcing-wise if you look for aviation. And if you look for temperature changes, for in this case, again, for different scenarios, you see a few things. Now, the colors are a little bit different than previously. You see the by far largest part comes from road. Then you have the second largest part is from aviation. And according to this scenario, see, while the aviation scenarios are quite low in the beginning of the scene, if you come to the end, the ranges already overlap, which means if we would continue like this, things aviation would play really a significant role. And if you look for shipping, the shipping part is fairly low, and then slowly recovers. This mostly due to the accumulating effect of CO2 and the reduction of sulfur in fuel for shipping, which is removed for other things because you do not want to acidify the ocean and you do not want to have the health effects associated with sulfur emissions. And I think now I should come more or less to my final slides. Conclusions. The impact of transport, in particular of aviation, on climate grows faster than the impact from other sectors of human activity. And if this continues, this increases the pressure on this sector. If you are growing faster than other sectors, the relative fraction gets larger, and the larger you point out, people point on you. So if you want to be, say, like in a swarm, you would like to swarm with the swarm, then you are not picked out. The non-CO2 effect of aviation, NOx effects, aviation-induced clouds and other things, they are particularly large in comparison to other modes of transport. This has another consequence if it's like this. If the CO2 emissions are reduced by using alternative fuels, whatever kind of things you do, this fraction will stay. So the relative importance grows with time. So there is something in the back which is coming if you don't cover this, which may cause severe problems in the future. And there's another thing. You can reduce, in particular in aviation, by climate-optimized flight planning, the impact of aviation. Because apart from CO2, the climate impacts very much depends where you fly, when you fly, and in what mode you fly. So you have a chance which is quite large in aviation. It's much larger than other modes of transport, where you don't have such many of this kind of screws. So it's a good thing. And what I currently think is it's a kind of temperature-based metrics, from my point of view, from the physical point of view, appears to be most suitable to account for the non-CO2 effects of aviation. And if you do it this way, rather than having a multiplier, you would have to first transfer the individual effects into equivalent CO2 by some metric and then add them, rather than putting a simple multiplier. Then you can have the chance to put incentives to those who reduce NOx, to those who reduce contrails, and those who reduce sulfur effects and any things. Yes, and this brings me to the end of my presentation. If you would like to have further information, go to this website, and I also would like to announce another stakeholder meeting in Brussels, which we have in about 1.5 months from now, where we present more details of these results. Thank you.